Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
Hello, Susan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Susan.
It sounds like it is the loneliness above and beyond everything else for you. There's a lot of everything else in your life at the moment, but it sounds yes. like it's mainly the loneliness.
It's pretty difficult, yes, I suppose. My experience has been that I've gone through cancer last year, and luckily, and I was lucky to get absolute excellent care, medical care, and I was lucky enough to get stem cell transplant in December in James's Hospital. My care was in the matter, and then my stem cell transplant.
Okay, and is that all in remission now?
Luckily, at the moment it is. I'm just 9 months after my transplant, so I'm in a good place physically.
Fingers crossed. Physically. Good, good, well done.
Yeah, I'm in a good place physically.
But,
I suppose, mentally. I see, I'm very much of the opinion that our mental health is every bit as important as our physical health. It's not a great advantage to have one without the other. You really need to have both. It's a bit like having a bicycle and there's only one wheel on it. You kind of have to have the two wheels on a bicycle, really, to make it work properly. And I think mental health is pretty important. Obviously, physical health is more acute.
But I have heard it said, Susan, by a number of cancer patients, perhaps really contrary to what you would think, that once they get out the other side of a cancer treatment and they get two thumbs up from their oncologist, that very often that's the point in time at which you start to feel depressed.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? It's a mystery. I mean, I suppose I've worked it out for myself because there isn't the same. ARC is an amazing institution. It's an amazing place. But with the COVID this year, a lot of the facilities that would normally be available with ARC just aren't available. And I think probably what helps most people with any kind of a trauma in their life is to connect with other people and be able to discuss their situations. You know, it can be very helpful. It can be very supportive to feel that other people have experienced something similar. Their experience might be a little bit different. Their circumstances might have been different. But I think every single human being feels anxiety.
Okay. But what was your experience? Fear. What was your journey here? I mean, you said you'd worked out for yourself why it was that at a point in time when you should have been feeling elated on top of the world, that you actually started to feel quite depressed.
I think what I worked out is that basically I'm dealing with the trauma of my cancer this year. I'm dealing with the after effects of it. When you're living through the cancer experience,
you just get on with it.
You get on with it, and you have a lot of support from your medical team. Mm. Afterwards, you're left on your own to a huge extent. That's not criticizing my medical team. You know, they've moved on to other patients who need their medical expertise. You know, I'm well at the moment, thanks be to God, so I'm fine. But mentally, you have to do that journey then yourself. And I suppose I also lost a very close friend during the pandemic when I was very, quite physically unwell myself. I mean, it takes quite a while to recover from a stem cell transplant.
Of course it does. Who was the friend?
My friend was called Ernie, and he was woven into the fabric of my life for 42 years. He was my very best friend. He was part of the very backbone of my life.
And best friends forever, Susan, or were you romantically involved?
No, we weren't romantically involved. I suppose that's why our friendship managed to survive. We weren't romantically involved, but we were very, very best friends forever. We just had a particular understanding. I had a very deep connection with him. I can't really speak for his connection with me, and he's dead now, so I never know. But we had a very important place in each other's lives. Unfortunately, I think when somebody isn't married or in a conventional relationship, maybe friendship doesn't always carry the same. You know, somebody, if I was married to Ernie, you know, people would recognise that you've lost somebody very close to you.
Of course. And how involved were you with each other?
Oh, well, we shared the same home for 40 years. We lived in different places, but we shared the same home. We had the same address for 40 years.
And it wasn't just a co-lodging arrangement. You actually shared your lives as well?
It was, to a certain extent, I suppose, co-lodging, but there was a lot of overlap. It wasn't, we had separate lives to an extent. It wasn't, I mean, I was romantically involved with other people. He was involved with other people. So, no, we didn't have a romantic involvement and we weren't exclusively involved in that way.
Doesn't that sound like an absolutely lovely setup that you have... But you're able to keep your romantic interests out of the house because Ernie was living there. You say, sorry, no, you can't be moving in.
Well, no, I lived with various people at different times in my life. I had a son, so I would have been in a very serious relationship with my son's father. But Ernie was always part of, it's a bit like, say, living with a brother, maybe, if you lived with a brother and you just didn't want that brother to move from your life.
Okay.
It was unusual, Philip. It was unusual. There's no two ways about it. I think we were pretty unique.
It sounds like it, but look, I know very little about relationships and giving a relationship advice, but one thing I do know is that you're never well advised to look at any relationship from the outside and think that you know what's going on, because obviously yourself and Ernie had something very special and very unique.
We had something very, very special. And you know what? I was really, really lucky to be able to be there with him for the last 5.5 months of his life. He was an amazing person.
But I was going to say...
He was frustrating, but he was amazing. But he was very irritating too.
But did his demise coincide with your treatment?
It did.
Oh, God.
I was diagnosed with lymphoma in January 2019, and Ernie was diagnosed with lung cancer in October 2018. And I had promised him I'd be there to help him through the chemo and to, you know, drive him to chemo, et cetera, et cetera. And it turned out that I was nowhere around to help Ernie with his chemo. And unfortunately, he only had a couple of sessions of chemo. He found it very tough. And then he went for radiation and that decreased his tumour a little bit. It was lung cancer. He had to decrease his tumour a little bit. But unfortunately, he developed secondary cancer.
Well, look, you know what? It's no wonder you feel a little bit depressed because, frankly, you've lost one of the major planks of your life. Your body has been through the most enormous trauma, and now you emerge.
During a pandemic, when you have absolutely
none of the normal
supports that you can rely on.
And when you look at everybody, because I'm assuming that in your state, you're treating your immune system with kid gloves and not asking too much of it, are you?
Not too bad. And I'm back reasonably, I'm probably back maybe 50% to where I was before I developed cancer in the first place.
But you're not well, out and about and tripping the light fantastic.
I do go out and about, Philip, but I would tread very, very carefully. Certainly not tripping the light fantastic, tread very carefully. I have limited energy anyway, but I am very, very, very wary of who I come in contact with. I'd be pretty neurotic about who I come in contact with. I suppose it's very frustrating to watch people who, you know, maybe are in luckier positions, who can dismiss the fact that so many people have lost their lives because of this COVID. So many people have lost their livelihoods, have lost their jobs. You know, there's every single day we hear in the news.
And so when you hear those people calling in to Joe and saying, oh, look, the only thing to do here is just let it rip through society. We can't afford to be shutting down the economy and then opening it up again 2 weeks later. We all have to take our chances. What's your reaction when you hear that argument?
Well, I don't have any answers for a start, Philip. I don't have any answers.
Yeah, but what's your emotional feeling, your emotional reaction to it?
My emotional feeling is, why can't we actually have a little bit of consideration for what other people might be going through in their lives? We're not all on the exact same page. I feel that, you know, for everybody, what they're dealing with in their life is their problem at that moment. And maybe it's that they've had, you know, a christening where nobody was able to turn up, or they've had a communion where it had to be very much restricted to, you know, very limited numbers. I mean, we had a cremation this year with Ernie where there were only 10 people allowed.
I can imagine that those are just abysmally sad occasions.
And everybody is dealing with something. There's nobody who's not dealing with something. But I suppose we need to keep it in perspective. And this is something that there aren't going to be easy answers for. People do have to make hard decisions.
But there are some people who say they have the answer, Susan, and they say that it's vulnerable people like you should take yourself off behind closed doors, stop interacting with the wider world so that the economy can return to some kind of limited normality.
Oh, well, good luck to them if you think that's going to work. No, I wouldn't. I want to live my life as best as I can. I don't know how much longer I'm going to have to live. I got a second chance. I'd certainly like to live it to the best of my ability. I don't think that me or anybody who's vulnerable or over 70 or whatever way they might present themselves as, it doesn't mean that they don't have a right to live their lives as well. Every single person has an equal right to live.
I have found a friend for you, somebody I want you to talk to. Nuala, good afternoon. Nuala, can you hear me?
Good afternoon.
How are you, Nuala?
I'm fine.
You said you feel that you may never leave the house again.
Well, it's not looking like there's an end to this.
No, not any time particularly soon.
There doesn't seem to be an end to it now, you know. And to be honest with you now, it's the young marrieds I feel sorry for, maybe with young children, a mortgage and losing their jobs. I mean, I had my life. I feel sorry for the young married people.
What's your life like now, though, Nuala? When was the last time you got out of the house?
Well, I only go out in the car with my daughter, but I very seldom go out. I don't go out at all, to be honest with you. I used to sit on the wall outside the door, and you might see an odd neighbour. Now we only see them when a neighbour dies. We've come out on the street to, you know, give them a send-off because you can't go to the church. Our church was in lockdown over COVID as well. But that's the last time I spoke to a neighbour, socially distanced, of course.
Oh, my God. Nuala, did you
COVID deaths now.
Did you ever imagine that in your retirement, your life would end up being restricted for going for drives with your daughter and then watching funeral corteges pass your front door?
Never. I never envisaged this.
And what's it doing to you? Are you keeping your chin up?
Well, when my daughter goes out, I don't go out at all shopping or anything. My daughter, God bless her, does everything for me. But, you know, the way you're guilty of overthinking, we're all guilty of that. So I just have to pull my act together and say, get up and try and do something. Take your mind off these dark thoughts. We're all guilty of overthinking.
Look, absolutely, we've got to keep on putting one foot in front of the other. And what are you doing? How are you filling your days?
I do a little bit of writing and I make a few phone calls to my sister and my sister-in-law and a few friends of mine. And then I try to keep as busy as I can, basically.
That doesn't really seem like much to be filling... No. More than an hour or two of every day with, though.
No, there's not, and then I read a lot. I'd be lost without books, to be honest with you. I'd be lost without a good read. Mm. But generally trying to fill the time in, because you can't go to the cinema or a show or anything, you know?
And the libraries are still closed, aren't they?
The libraries so
how are you getting books? Are you ordering them online?
My daughter buys them for me up in the Nutgrove, or if not, she orders them in for me from Amazon, dare I say it.
Does she have good taste in literature?
I know what I want.
Okay.
She reads out what's on offer and I know what I'd like, you know?
But that's my God, Nuala, I'm sorry, it is not any kind of a life. Ordering in the books that you want, watching the corteges pass the front door.
Well, aren't I alive? I'm glad to be alive. That's all I could say, really. Mm. But it's not a real life, as you know. But I'm not the only one now. I'm not the only one. We're all in this together.
Susan, does it strike a chord with you, what Nuala's saying?
It does, indeed, it does. Just on the point of libraries are open for collection because I use my local library and it's
good. I'm glad to hear that again.
You can't actually go into them.
Right, but you can collect.
If you know what you want and you're able to ring in and ask for something and to have it in stock, they'll get it. Or if they don't have it, they'll
good
get
news,
it
because the Boucher Hayes girls are absolutely bankrupting me with ordering books online. We've got to get back into the library.
And the thing is, you have to keep storing them, then if you do buy them, whereas with the library, you can give them back so you don't have to keep collecting them in your house.
Yeah.
No, but I think, I mean, I've just listened to Nuala there and she seems to be very strong in the way she's describing it. She certainly seems somebody who's fairly strong-minded and keeping herself together. But it is the lack of human connection that people are experiencing is it's going to be detrimental to us. It's detrimental.
And how do you both cope with, because the thing that I think is absent from all of our lives at the moment is, what is the thing to look forward to? What is the thing that you can say to yourself, oh, well, at least there is that in a few weeks' time or whatever? Because, my God, I mean, you don't even want to begin to think about what Christmas this year is going to be like.
Yeah, I don't think there is anything, Philip. That's the whole point for us.
I shouldn't have asked that question, Susan, because I was afraid that was what you were going to say.
That's what the real anxiety comes for all of us. That's the crux of all of our anxiety. That's what's behind everybody's loneliness or sense of isolation, is that there's nobody in charge, really. There is no mammy and daddy who's keeping the whole ship afloat. There is nobody who really knows what is going to happen. And there isn't anything we can really... Yeah, we can give ourselves certain goals and say, oh, okay, look forward to Christmas. But at the same time, it's the back of your mind. You know, it's a little bit like the analogy of with cancer. With cancer, you hope that the doctors are going to be able to find the chemo or the trick that's going to get you better. You hope. But at the same time, you're thinking, oh, will it work for me? Will I be the lucky person? And it's the same with the COVID, I think. I mean, people are clinging to a hope that we have a vaccine or that...
I know, but in the meantime, it's a kind of a Russian roulette every time you go out the door. Nuala, you sound like somebody who has got that recipe for something to look forward to sorted out. What is it in your case?
Well, I'm hoping I'll be able to go to my son's for Christmas. I always hosted Christmas and did the cooking and all, but I'm getting too old to do it, to be honest with you. So I was there last year when I came out of hospital, so I presume it'll be the same this year. You know, just really live from day to day and take what's dished up at you. That's just the way I'm looking at it.
And do you like to cook, to bake?
Yeah, I do. Now, listen, I'm no Mary Berry.
I'm thinking that I might leave some flour and some eggs on the bottom of your drive and you could pop out a cake for me tomorrow, no? That would occupy a few hours.
I'm still baking away. They love my pastries, so they love my apple tarts and they love my speciality, my pavlovas. They love those. Plenty of fresh cream and fresh fruit on them, you know? So...
Like the message here is everybody should just pick up the phone, reach out, say hello to all of those who aren't even necessarily ill, but just living diminished lives.
I have friends that are in their 90s, Philip. And God help them, I've been promising to go up. I have a little gift for them. They were so nice to Debbie during her 50th birthday, sent her beautiful flowers. But I've been promising to go up to visit them. Mm. But now with this new lockdown, I can't get up to them. But I was on the phone the other day. So that's the only way you can keep in touch.
Fingers crossed that was going to change.
Well,
1-850-715-815. Anne Dempsey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Philip.
You're one of the people running Senior Line. Your calls are up 200%.
Yeah, up 200% since COVID. Double the normal. We got 10,000 calls last year, Philip. We'll be well up into 15, 16, 17 by Christmas, I know, the way things are going. It's just as Nuala and Susan have been speaking. At the beginning, we got a huge rush of calls because people were just told to go at home and stay at home. And a lot of those people were very unused to getting that message. They had their lives like everyone else. And it was a terrible blow. And people were very indignant and very kind of helpless as to know where to turn. So we got an awful lot of calls at that stage. And we responded by we used to issue twice daily updates to our volunteers to give people all the latest information about what was going on and all the kind of services that would have helped them. Now, as things have gone on, things have changed, of course. Everything's biting deeper. And a lot of the calls we're getting now would be from people like Nuala and Susan, you know, people who have their lives, had their lives, and suddenly a lot has been taken from them. So what we offer, Philip, is, first of all, we listen. And an awful lot of people just want us to know how they are. And somebody knows how they are. Somebody knows that they're there. An awful lot of people, as we know, older people live on their own. So we're there to listen and we're there to reassure. And we have very good, practical, helpful conversations with our callers.
I know. You would never have thought that we would have arrived at a situation where one of the most valuable things in society could turn out to be a bit of a natter.
Yeah. Good stuff. And you see, it's such a paradox, Philip, in that the whole aim now is to be, the need for mental health to be kind of connected. We all know that. And yet we're being told to be socially distant. So the telephone is wonderful in that you can be connected in safety on the phone.
Yeah.
So it's come into its own really now. So Senior Line is obviously very, very busy.
1850 715 815. Anne, thank you very much. Elaine, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Philip. How are you?
What did you want to say?
I suppose listening to Nuala and Susan, I completely understand where they're coming from. The carpet is swept out from under us in May of last year when my husband had an ongoing pain in his shoulder. And eventually, after many sleepless nights, I said to him one Sunday night, right, definitely got to go to the doctor in the morning. So we both work just outside Galway City. And that morning, I insisted he went to the doctor.
Well done.
And we went that morning. And he got a phone call that afternoon to say he would prefer if he was sent for an MRI. So he did the MRI on the Monday. And the doctor rang us on the Tuesday to say he would like him to go for another MRI. Something showed up on the MRI that he wasn't too happy with. We had originally thought it was a meniscal tear, which is under the shoulder blade. But little did we think that that was on the Tuesday. And on the Wednesday, we had to go to Beaumont and he was put on the critical list. Steve had a tumour in his spinal column.
And was the treatment successful? I'm just wondering, did he end up going through a similar experience to Susan in terms of what happens after your care?
I suppose the treatment can vary so much from person to person depending on, in my husband's case, his first surgery went okay. He was in hospital for up to 10 days, but not long after he getting home, he started having these like spasms, which were like epileptic seizures kind of thing. And I remember sitting on the floor one Saturday night at 4:30 in the morning after 19 of these going, this can't go on, something's not right. And I had begged with the neurologist that something wasn't right, and I'd emailed him, and eventually I sent him videos so they could actually see what was going on, because to look at him, he looked fine, and everybody would say,
well,
oh,
done.
He looks great.
Well done,
you know?
Well done. It's important to keep on nagging and persisting when you have doubts.
Yeah.
How is he now, Elaine?
He's doing well. He actually had to go back for a second surgery because the spinal column herniated in his neck, and it was coming back out through the wound in his neck and hips.
Oh, my God.
While he was having episodes. So the second surgery had a terrible amount of complications to the point he lost his walk, his dexterity was gone, he had to be fed, you know.
Did he get these back?
Up in the bed, and they're coming back eventually. You know, he still has a long road ahead, but he's come an awful long way.
Okay.
He was in a wheelchair up until New Year this year. He went to the NRH for a couple of months for rehabilitation.
And is he confined to base now, or can he get out and about at all?
Yeah, we get out and about. The local Cree 5K was on Friday night, and that was his milestone. So he did that on Friday night.
He ran it or he walked it?
He walked it.
Well done him, my God.
So, but it's down to his own determination. He never complained. He never gave up. He was determined that no matter what happened, you know, that he was going to fight this and to the best he can do, having no physio, no follow-up kind of
so
thing.
Has he got this secret recipe of something to look forward to sorted out then?
I don't know what that is. Kind of, we look at it in a very kind of different light. People are saying to us, how are you getting on with lockdown? Lockdown for us was a break to process everything that happened, because for 10 months we were in such a whirlwind. And he went from being fine, being perfectly fine, to the following day not even being able to do anything for himself. So it all happened very quickly. And we looked at that in COVID and we thought, look, all I ever wanted to do was to get him home and he'd be okay. So when we did get home, we were like, okay, you know, it's time for nobody to visit and just like come to the realization of sit down and talk about everything, because I had to make decisions on his behalf when he was so in. He contracted meningitis and got very, very in after the second surgery. So it was touch and go. But
throughout all of this, Elaine, it sounds like you have found reasons to keep on putting one foot in front of the other, getting up out of the bed in the morning and making the bed and just keeping on going.
Yeah, and that's our motto, keep on keeping on. We take every day as it comes. It's not easy. 100 times I wanted to sit down and cry and not get up when family were helping as much as they could. But at the end of the day, when you come in and close the door and it's just the two of you, it's very hard.
Okay.
You're trying to hold down a job, pay a mortgage, and there's one person and do everything. But
well done you, because you have kept on keeping on, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, and that's our thing. We have each other.
Good.
We're both good. He's doing really well. And lockdown is what it is. We're being very careful. And we're staying in and doing all the things we should be doing. But as long as we have each other, and, you know, that's what I was saying to Nuala and Susan, is you're not alone. There's a lot of people out there in the same situation, and we're definitely stronger together.
All right. Well, you're the poster pin-ups for this particular conversation, Elaine. Well done. Fair play to both of you. And the best wishes to your husband as well. All right.
Thank
we're going to take a break. Susan, Nuala, stay with me, though, please.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Susan, you still there? Nuala, you still with us?
I'm still here.
Good. Stay with us. Dick Redmond, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very good. You found something to look forward to.
Yes. So looking forward to my first grandchild.
Ah, yes.
When's
that going to be?
In March.
Congratulations.
And I'm so over the moon. My whole family are over the moon. And there's so much love to give there is to a grandchild. So it's a lot to look forward to. Brilliant.
I know. And your grandchild is going to be your greatest ally, because you have an enemy in common in the form of your children. There's no greater friendship, alliance or connivances than between grandparents and grandchildren.
Yeah. And what else can I spend my money on? On a grandchild.
Exactly.
So much to look forward to.
Spoil them rotten, Dick.
Yeah. I've always wanted a grandchild, and that's exactly what will happen. They'll be spoiled rotten. They'll be spoiled rotten. But it's something to look forward to. It's not doom and gloom, the end of the world. And there's thousands of people out there like me, like brothers and sisters and mammies and daddies expecting all that. And they're all something to look forward to.
Yeah. It's worthwhile remembering, isn't it? There's going to be 80,000 little babies or whatever it is born this year. In addition to all of the people who are leaving this earth, the same number will join the planet, and we'll just keep on keeping on.
But it's something for everybody that's involved in a child coming into the world to look forward to.
It really is. Patrick, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much.
What did you want to say to Susan and Nuala?
Well, Susan and Nuala, if you use the internet, you might well be able to link in with ARC Cancer Support Services. And the website address is ARC Cancer Support. That's all one word. And ARC is spelled ARC.
You had done that though, Susan, hadn't you?
Well, you see, the thing is, for me, Philip, I am well aware of all the supports online with ARC. for me, I need to be with a human being and see their faces, see their expressions, have that connection with them. I mean, I'm well aware of all the resources online, and, you know, they're fine for some people. For me, even just a smile at a person on the street gives me a better feeling than to connect with the 10 people online. I just like that.
I know.
Yes, it is very, very valuable for some people, absolutely.
You're quite right. It doesn't suit everybody. But some people have been able to make the transition in the various support groups from meeting in person to sort of meeting online via Zoom. It's a poor substitute in many ways.
Yeah, I was going to say, Patrick, does it work for you? Because for an awful lot of people, Zoom is a cause of stress rather than a relief.
Well, I try and, for my sins, I kind of try and facilitate a secondary cancer support group. And about three quarters of the people involved in that group have, with a little bit of stress, migrated to using Zoom meetings and have managed. And it's something to look forward to each month. And we're able to keep in touch with each other. It's nowhere near the same as meeting in person. And we're all looking forward to the day when that, those sort of personal meetings can start up again. But it doesn't suit everybody, Philip, no. And ARC has one-to-one services as well, delivered by professionals, and also various courses that are going on and one-off talks. But there's nothing like, you know, a hug from a group of people that you've got to know over time. And we're not able to do that at the moment. Everything is kind of virtual.
Nothing like a hug. Nothing like a newborn baby either, Dick, a newborn grandchild.
We'll all be coming to share Dick's newborn baby.
I was just going to say, Dick, I'm sure there'll be some GDPR rule somewhere that we'll be stepping on the toes of, but would you share pictures with Nuala and Susan for me? Dick, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here, I'm still here.
Would you share a few pictures of the Chiseler when he or she comes?
I certainly will. Well, it'll be up to Mammy and Daddy. I would say we'll have no problem there whatsoever.
I'm sure you could sneak a sneaky picture of yourself with the baby.
Oh, yeah, there'll be plenty of them going around, all right.
Nuala, are there grandchildren in your life?
Yes, I have grandchildren.
How do you get on with them?
Oh, great. I get on great with them. Very, very well.
And do you FaceTime or Zoom any of them, or are you confined to the phone?
Well, I could do that, but one is busy working, one is studying hard, and the other one is the same, you know, so I just keep in touch with Facebook. They message me, I message them. And then they can come down and visit with their dad when he's coming down, you know?
No. You'd never thought, would you, how much that one of those little messages when you see the alert in your inbox can actually bring a smile to your face and lighten up a day.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. But like your previous caller, there's nothing like face to face, you know, to see the human, a human being.
Yeah,
that's what we're all lacking in. I have the use of my daughter's internet and things like that. Some people aren't internet savvy, you know, but thank God I can use it.
I'm blessed, Philip, that
Patrick.
I have six grandchildren, but the three older ones live in France, and we can Zoom them maybe once a week, and that's to look forward to. But I'm really blessed since the start of all this. The three younger ones are actually living next door to us. So when my wife and I went into lockdown, I think a lot of people who were with cancer or who had other conditions, they were ahead of the government. You know, they're three or four weeks ahead of the official advice and went into lockdown early.
Of course they were, yeah.
Yeah, and even at the moment, I suspect many people are living as though it was stage four or even stage five. They're living that way at the moment.
So having them next door, I'd imagine that even being able to just throw open the window and listen to them playing in the back garden is...
I was going to say, even if we couldn't hear them, we could even if we couldn't see them, we could hear them.
I know.
And you know, that was such a blessing. And we were just so grateful for that, just to be able to hear them playing.
I heard a story about a gentleman.
Through the hedge.
I heard a story about a gentleman stopping outside a house in which there were kids playing in the garden and saying to one of the parents, I hope you don't mind me just standing here for a few minutes. I just haven't heard the sound of children playing in such a long time. That, perhaps I think more than any other tale of the pandemic that I have heard, was the one that made me choke up and think, oh my God.
Yeah. So we were trying to count our blessings during the first major lockdown, which, I mean, we locked down for about 12 weeks in total. And we were trying to count our blessings. We were getting the shopping delivered. A neighbour very kindly offered to deliver a newspaper into our postbox. And we walked around the garden for some exercise. And, of course, we were, at that time, we were blessed with good weather. And now, you know, facing into the winter, we can't rely on that. And we make the best of each day. And again, we're back to walking around the garden at the moment. But again, you know, it's if you can get up out of the bed each morning and try and find some joy each day. If I've been looking at the birds, looking at the, I downloaded a few apps, one to identify the aeroplanes that are flying overhead and where they've come from and where they're going to. And another one at night time that will identify the stars and the planets for you. So it's amazing, you know, everything has kind of slowed down a lot. And
there's an app that identifies insects and apps that you can use to identify flowers I have on the phone. And we have passed so many hours learning and forgetting the names of every spider in the house.
But
you're right. You're absolutely right. You can get so much solace from those little things. Listen, it has been lovely talking to all of you, Susan, Nuala and Dick. I hope, fingers crossed, that everything goes all right now for March with the arrival of the little one. And thank you to Patrick as well. Take care, all of you.
Thanks, Philip. Take care. Stay safe.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Nuala, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Philip.
The call for jury duty came last Friday, but not for you, for your dad.
That's correct. It came to my mum's house, and my dad died 2.5 years ago.
Which is not uncommon, isn't it? In fact, I think my memory of the jury duty summons is that there's a few lines in there about, look, our apologies if we've called you in error.
There is,
So it happens.
I read it. Yeah, it happens. It happens. But I think what struck me, well, it came the day before his 84th, what would have been his 84th birthday. And I just thought, you know, at this particular COVID time, why are elderly people getting jury duty summonses?
Yeah. Don't they just use the electoral register?
The electoral register.
So they wouldn't have any information on that apart from your name and your address?
No, they wouldn't.
But it shouldn't be beyond the ken of the government to find out how old somebody is.
Well, apart from that, the fact that 12 years ago he was excused from jury duty again because he was 71 and he was ill.
Okay,
at that time.
And a judge actually excused him, or did he just write in?
Both my parents were called, and I think they both had to write separately. They both were recovering from illness at the time. They were both 71, and you know they did get letters back saying they were excused. Mm. It does say in the handbook, you know, as right once you're over 65, you can be excused from serving on a jury.
I'd often wondered about that, though. You know, when you hear after some particularly long trials that I have covered that the judge will excuse the jury from ever serving on a jury again for life, did that mean that the court service would never write to them again, or that they, once they got the letter from the court service calling them, that they were able to say, oh, look, I've been excused for life because I sat for 5 months or whatever it is,
on a court case. Well, you seem to be answering the question there that the court service will come looking for you again. It's up to you to say, no, 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 I have been excused.
Yeah, obviously. You know, because I, as I said, I read through the handbook. The following people may be excused as of right. And the first list there is people over the age of 65. So you obviously have to inform them for whatever reason, you know. I suppose it just was difficult, the fact that it came before what would have been his birthday.
Absolutely.
Or what is his birthday.
And two and a half years is still within that really, really raw period. So, you know.
Yeah, it is. But I think, you know, the thing that really did stick in my head was the fact that would you want an 84-year-old in this vulnerable time in a jury, or, you know, serving on a jury in a court situation?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's not saying that 84-year-olds are not spry and healthy and everything like that and are capable of doing that. But when we're being asked to shelter and you know, look after our elderly.
I suppose it's relatively easy, isn't it, to make contact with the court service?
Yeah, I actually did as well.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I just sent an email just to say that he was deceased.
And did you get a reply?
Just an automatic reply.
Oh, gosh, that's not particularly sensitive, is it?
It's an automatic reply. You know, you have an email address. You can reply, I just gave the bare bones, juror number, deceased. And the automatic reply is just...
Which was acknowledging receipt of your email.
Yeah, it's acknowledging receipt and they will be in contact within the next 14 days.
It sounds like such a small thing, but yes, it obviously... It hurt, it stung, yeah?
Well, it did because, as I said, my mum opened it and she had been listening to the show last week. And, you know, all this happened to other people and then this happens to you, you know?
Okay. 1-850-715-815, Nuala, take care. Thank you very much
for
your call. Another Nuala now. How are you, Nuala?
I'm not too bad, Philip. Not too bad.
You're in that category of people that I have to say I have wondered about and worried about quite often during the course of the pandemic. If you're reliant upon group sessions and therapy meetings, and that's just been
Absolutely.
A complete no-no for you, yeah?
A big no-no. AA meetings are off the radar.
How often would you go usually, Nuala?
Normally I go twice a week. I was sober for 15 years and I've relapsed now. And normally I would go twice a week to meetings. They're off the radar. To be honest with you, online means nothing to me. I can't connect with it at all.
Really?
Yeah.
And how badly have you relapsed, Nuala?
I'm drinking 2 bottles of wine a day. And I'm one of these people that fall into the category of kind of a functional alcoholic. That doesn't make me better or worse than anyone else, but I can get on with my life, if you know what I mean. It's not having a great impact on my everyday-to-day life, but I'm very unhappy and have been ringing Coonmurra in a Thai every day for the last 30 days. You're asked to make a call, try to get 130 days. Try to get admission for rehab.
And
it's a long time, Philip.
Do you have a sponsor?
I'm in an awkward position at the moment in so much as my sponsor, who I normally would relate to, is not well at the moment with an illness of her own.
Oh, God.
And I don't really want to lob my issues on her.
And was there anybody else in the groups that you used to attend that you could turn to?
It's difficult because you build up a relationship with a few, but you don't build up a relationship with everyone. And the main person that I felt I could connect with is ill herself at the moment.
Right.
I've tried to do it on my own and I'm not getting there. And I know that the only way I'm going to do it, because I was in rehab 15 years ago, is to go in and face it.
But it's I can't get over just how stark the absence of the contrast between 2 weeks, two meetings a week.
A week, yes.
And now being substituted by two bottles a day.
None. And suddenly, you know, part of a programme is a spiritual aspect rather than a religious one. And plus you have no ceremonies or anything to, or anything like that, try to keep you ticking over. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it really does go to show how valuable and how important, because the AA meetings are. Because, you know, I'm sorry,
oh,
in my naivety, I would have said that 15 years sober and continuing to be disciplined about going to those meetings means
that
you're on the straight and narrow forever.
Yeah, but I thought that too. But as I say, one day at a time, it only takes one, and they're dead right.
You sound so self-aware, Nuala. I mean, you've...
Well, I'm very self-aware because I've been through the problem before, Philip. I've been there before. I've gone to rehab. I made the stupid mistake of taking one drink and thinking I'd get away with it, even though at meetings and everything you're told is the one that'll set you back.
But how can you be this self-aware and analyse the problem this intelligently, yet go and buy those two bottles every day?
I know. Absolutely idiotic, and I'm 5 minutes from the supermarket. I mean, there's no rationalisation to it. I can't rationalise it out. I get up every day and I say I'm not going to get a bottle today.
But yet, at some point in the day, you find yourself walking towards the supermarket.
Then I'm up to the supermarket, which is 5 minutes away from me.
And what time of the day would you do that?
It initially started off that it would be 5 or 6 in the evening, but it is getting closer and it's coming back to lunchtime, yeah.
Would you ring Joe tomorrow and let him chide you? No, sorry, Joe's not on air tomorrow. There's a budget programme. Would you ring Joe on Wednesday and let him give you a ticking off? And a bit of love and a bit of support as well, Nuala.
I'm fed up with getting ticking off, to be honest.
You're dead right. You're too old to be ticked off or had fingers wagged at you.
No, you're never too old to be ticked off. But my family are very good. They have tried everything. And to a certain extent, I don't think they realise I'm trying as well. But I am. And I just want to get this over and done. I know the only way I can get it over and
is
done
to go inside.
Is by admission, yeah.
Because...
But you see, with COVID...
I mean, but the amazing thing about you is you're not remotely embarrassed about talking about your condition.
Here you are on
the national airwaves sharing this. And
yeah, I don't care. And they'll all recognise my accent. I know that. because I talk to people about it. I don't cover it up. It's an illness like everything else, Philip.
Yeah, no, it is. It is, and there shouldn't be shame attached to it.
No, there shouldn't be. And I mean, when you're trying to do your best, that's why I talk about it. I don't make any qualms about it. I talk about it to my friends and my neighbours. I tell them I'm back on the drink. And thanks be to God, I'm lucky enough not falling around the place, right, you know. But it's still an addiction to me and it's still a problem to my life.
Yeah.
It's not right. I didn't want to be like this. I was much happier when I wasn't drinking.
And what is the sadness, if you don't mind me intruding, that has you turning to drink?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I started on holidays probably the year before last night, one after walking miles, and I was thirsty. And my friend was having a beer and I was ordering a coffee and I said, oh no, I'll just have a beer. And then I said, I'll have one that evening with a loving Italian with a glass of wine.
I know, but if you're drinking two bottles, it's because there are certain things that you don't want to be thinking and feeling.
No. There's a bit of dissension amongst family, yeah, about my drinking with my daughter, yeah.
Okay.
And that's not very pleasant. And I have one granddaughter who I idolise.
Right. So has it become a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy then, Nuala, that your drinking has caused problems that you then want to run away from, so you do that by more drinking?
I don't want to run away from them. I try to confront them, but it's not working out.
And
because I can't stop drinking. And if I stop drinking, I know that will work out.
Right. And are you going to be able to access these services now during the pandemic?
Well, as I said, I'm on the waiting list for Coonamurra in Athy. They ask you to ring every day. I've been ringing for 130 days. And they're still, now I think they're waiting for funding for their new, for their women's unit. But I have rang faithfully every day for the last 130 days waiting admission.
Oh, fingers crossed for you, Nuala. I really mean
Thank
that.
Thank you.
You
Thank
sound
you.
Like a lovely woman, and it's an awful, awful disease to get its teeth into
it's,
you
it's,
like
it's
that.
It's awful. It's awful, yeah.
Okay.
And it runs in my family, and unfortunately I'm another.
Okay.
One well, that's hidden by it.
Fingers crossed for you, and call any time. You know the number.
Lovely. Thank you, Philip.
All right.
Thank
Take
you.
Care, Nuala. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.